Welcome to the RSP cast number 41, the Keith Byers edition. But Keith Byers wasn't a quarterback, but Mark Schofield was. And Mark Schofield is rejoining us for this episode of the RSP cast to talk about NFL quarterbacks and kind of review their 2018 season. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Matt, always great to be with you. Well, you know, you say I was a quarterback, and it's a loosely defined term saying I was a quarterback. I technically did play the quarterback position. We can just put it that way.
Hey, well, that's the same way I talk about being a musician. So.
Hey, you know, I mean, it's something to tell the grandkids, right?
Right, exactly. So today I thought it'd be fun. We can just, you know, just review as many quarterbacks as we can and discuss that position overall in the league and what kind of developments we saw or regressions we saw from players. But just before we begin, what have you learned this year? It can be specifically about one player, but more so maybe technique or concept or ideas or something that's been reinforced to you about the position through your studies this year at places like the Big Blue Review, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, Football Guys, and of course the RSP and Inside the Pylon. Can't forget Inside the Pylon at all.
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. And I think you could go in a couple of different areas. I think, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to sort of wrap my mind around and I'm sort of struggling with it is, have I sort of undervalued the velocity factor? And, you know, I've long been of the opinion that, look, it's not, you know, a necessity. It's not an ultimate trait that every quarterback has to have. But I think sort of watching Josh Allen over the past couple of weeks and seeing some of the things that he can do and the way that, you know, the velocity that he can dial up on throws can get him out of trouble at times, can allow him to overcome some of the deficiencies that he still has as a quarterback. I think as I start to approach draft season and I start to approach, you know, the draft evaluation process, I have to take a look at how I view velocity and how I sort of rank it or maybe under rank it when I'm looking at quarterbacks. Because, you know, when Allen was coming through his process, you know, I, among others, thought that, look, you know, it's nice, but it's not a necessity. You know, the arm is going to get him in trouble. And there have been times when his reliance on arm strength has put him into trouble. But there have also been times when his arm strength has bailed him out of some situations that other quarterbacks would find themselves throwing interceptions on. You know, when he's slow with his reads and slow with his decisions, he could still complete throws to all levels of the field because of that ultimate trait that he has. And we're sort of in that, you know, National Signing Day period. And Ryan Day, the new head coach at Ohio State, had a fascinating quote that he had about evaluating quarterbacks. When he had his press conference, he says, when he studies quarterbacks and evaluates quarterbacks, he looks for one sort of extraordinary trait. You know, with JT Barrett, it was sort of his competitive fire, his competitive spirit. With, you know, Dwayne Haskins, he didn't illustrate what it was, but I think we could say that, look, you look at Haskins, you see some of the throws that he can make. It might be that arm talent. And I think when you look at quarterbacks like Josh Allen, it might be time to give more weight to, okay, the overpowering arm, it might work for some quarterbacks. And if it is their extraordinary trait, maybe we should give some credence to the fact that it might be enough to succeed in the National Football League, as long as you do see some development in those other areas come along, albeit maybe slower. So, I mean, I think that's something that I'm grappling with right now. And look, you know, evaluation and self-evaluation should always be part of your process. And so that's something that I'm sort of working through right now. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, while it's funny because talking about Josh Allen, I mean, I've been joking around the past month that, you know, he's the Michael Vick, the Robert Griffin player of this draft, you know, compared to the way people wanted to make him out to be. He's the quote unquote stereotypical black quarterback that people over stereotype. You know, whereas I think Lamar Jackson is less so that, and I've been kind of, you know, trolling Bills fans a little lightheartedly about that because they got rid of Tyrod Taylor. And, you know, but when you look at Josh Allen, the way that I see this is, yeah, I agree with you that he has helped himself with his arm, but I think a lot of it is more that he's helped himself with his legs. I think that the Bills have been more or less like, listen, you're a drop back quarterback. We want to make you a drop back quarterback. We're not asking you to do read option or zone read type of looks. And we don't know if you have the footwork or the eye or the vision to actually work that out very well. But we know that if you drop from the pocket, set five, you know, 3, 5, 7 steps and nothing comes open, or you don't see it come open, and we don't make you overthink it or make you feel bad about missing your reads and just tell you to run, you're going to get us yards because you're fast, you're big, and you're strong. And then also, if you do see something before you break the line of scrimmage and you're in position to throw, you've got the gun to make it happen. So I think they've kind of decided that we're not going to tell everybody blatantly that we're going to use your legs the way that, you know, the Ravens have blatantly said with Lamar Jackson, but we're going to essentially do the same thing approaching from the opposite direction in terms of offensive scheme. And so while I appreciate his arm and I appreciate that he can get himself out of trouble, I still think he gets himself in a lot of trouble. And I guess to me, it's like, it's the tier of expectation when it comes to evaluation that I've kind of learned. What I'm learning is that I don't want, you know, I didn't say Josh Allen would be a bust, but I certainly, like you and like everybody else, a lot of other people, I feel like he's going to need time. And he's had success, you know, on a level of making plays.
Yep.
As he had success with a lot of wins, he needs more of a team for us to see whether he can continue to be that way and whether he's going to develop enough in other ways to avoid those 3 to 5 mistakes in a game that could be critical depending on how the defense executes. And to me, is that the difference between him being a Phillip Rivers or above type of player? Or is that the difference between him being a journeyman starter and below? And I think that there's something true about how, I like your point about, there's something true about having a, you know, a trump card, having something that stands out about the player. And it doesn't have to be arm strength. It can be any certain thing. But then what comes along with that is, who's he going to work with when he gets to the NFL that's going to exploit that and maximize that skill? Are they going to, or are they going to try and make him learn things that he's not good at and try and make him be excellent at things that he may only ever be average at, if he gets to even average, and while ignoring what's excellent about him? You know, if you take Josh Allen and put him in another system and they're like, listen, we don't care about your arm strength. What we want is hyper accuracy and your ability to process reads and get rid of the ball quickly. And we're going to put you in situations where if you're not getting rid of the ball within 2.9 seconds to 3.3 seconds, every time, you're going to take hits, you know, and you're going to be in a lot of trouble. I don't think we'd even see the success he's had right now. So it's like, it's not to be down on Josh Allen. It's more to be, for me, it's about being cautious about, if he just has one thing, that's great. But if he's missing a number of other things, where's that fit becomes so much more important. And then it's like, who's gonna be that great match for that player? And it makes it so much more of a crapshoot that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, if you took Josh Allen right now and dropped him into New England and said, look, you know, you're going to have to read multiple concepts at each side of the field and the ball is going to have to be out in 2.8 seconds, it'd be a disaster. You know, so I think what Brian Daboll has done with him, I think, has been impressive because he's played to his strength. And like you said, look, you know, the ultimate job of a coach is to put your players in the best position to be successful. And they've kind of done that with him. They've relied on his legs a little bit. They've said you can be a runner. He's had, you know, I think 2 100 rushing yard rushing games of this season. And he came just short against Jacksonville back in week 12, where he had 99. And so they've basically said, look, you know, it's almost Trubisky-esque in a way, where it's make your first two reads. If you don't like what you see, be an athlete, be yourself, go make something happen with your legs. The one thing that I've also been impressed by with him is one of the biggest knocks I had on him was everything needed the fastball to him. You know, every problem required the fastball. That was his answer for everything. He's shown a better understanding of touch this year. It's still not great. It's still not where it needs to be, but he's at least shown improvement in that area. And, you know, as the quarterback that I looked at out of those five first rounders that I thought needed the most work, I think I've been pleasantly pleased with the workload he's shown this year and the developmental arc. He still has a long way to go, but I'm more confident now than I was, you know, this time last year that he will get there in the NFL.
Nice. And yeah, I mean, he's shown those moments of touch maybe on like 3 to 5 throws out of his whole college canon, but it's true that he has shown more of that with Buffalo. So that's awesome. Now you mentioned Mitchell Trubisky. So let's start with the NFC and talk about some of these guys who are, you know, are younger starters. I mean, you've covered a lot about Trubisky, you know, at a variety of outlets this year. What's your takeaway with him now that you've seen kind of, you know, the ups and downs of his play?
You know, it's fascinating. And I just did a piece over at the RSP about mechanics and when they matter. And, you know, I've talked a lot about mechanics don't matter until they matter. And as long as you get the ball where it needs to be, when it needs to be there, I don't care how you throw it. But when the ball isn't getting to where it's supposed to be and mechanics are playing a part, that's when you have to sort of look at them. And, you know, I wrote this over at Pro Football Weekly a couple of weeks ago. If I were Matt Nagy, you know, whenever their season ends, and it may end after the NFC Championship game or the loss, it may end after a game in the Super Bowl, you know, with how that defense is playing.
Yeah.
I give Mitchell Trubisky one assignment this offseason. Fix your left foot. Just whatever you have to do, fix it. Because that was an issue for him back at UNC where he would step in the bucket on throws. He would open that left hip up too early. It is still an issue for him. If you look at a number of his interceptions, particularly when he's trying to throw that bender route, that's coming either from the right to the left or the left to the right. You know, we typically see it 4 verticals out of a 3-by-1, and that inside receiver of the trips has to run that bending route. He misses that throw time and time again. And 9 times out of 10 when he misses it, it's because he's, you know, stepping into the bucket with his left foot. I was very pleased. A touchdown that he threw, you know, against the Packers to win that game in the fourth quarter was a corner out to the left corner of the end zone to Trey Burton. And that left foot was much more in line with where it needed to be along the target line. So that's the main thing with him right now that I see is that left foot. Overall, I think similar to Allen, if you talk about trump cards for quarterbacks, his athleticism might be his right now. And you can see it in the play calling from Matt Nagy, who I think deserves a ton of credit for what he's done with Trubisky this year. Because, you know, whenever he feels the need to get a drive started, wherever he feels the need to sometimes get him into the flow of the game, he will either call RPOs or even call designed runs to sort of get him back to on familiar ground as a quarterback. You see, for example, they had a drive against the Rams. It came after, I think, the strip sack for a safety, and then they had a short field situation. They basically went RPO, RPO, RPO down the field for a touchdown. They got him easy, defined reads, get him back to the college footing. Sometimes when they want to get him started at the, you know, the start of the second half or even the start of a game, they'll go zone read with him. You know, they did it against Tampa Bay for an early play. They did it against some other teams where they had an arc block with Trey Burton releasing to the second level. So they knew that, look, if you get the chance to keep it, go make something happen. And Trubisky himself has said that, look, sometimes he starts games, sometimes he starts halves too hyped up. So Nagy has learned a way to get his quarterback sort of settled and into the rhythm of games to use his athleticism. And so I think, you know, Trubisky deserves some credit for the work that he's done, sure, but I think Nagy deserves a ton of credit for how he's used his quarterback.
Yeah, I agree completely. And it is funny because I think one of the things that I mentioned in my evaluation of him in college is that he might have been the best runner of the quarterbacks in that class. And that included Deshaun Watson. He was an underrated runner. Right. And you can see that. And it's good. I mean, again, we're talking about a performance sport, a performance position. And if you have someone that you know is, you know, gets a little too hyper and as a player when they get up on that stage early on, you probably, you know, there are certain types of performance mediums where that person probably would need to do some sort of physical activity before they get to get some of that energy off before they get onto the stage when it's time for the performance to start. in this particular situation, you can kind of use that to your advantage in a different light. And the way you described it's perfect. I do agree that Matt Nagy has done a great, Nagy's done a great job. I mean, because in a lot of other offenses, I think if they, again, if you were in a Patriots offense, I think that he would also be a borderline disaster to fans with some of the things that, that would happen with him. In comparison to this one, where they're giving a lot of space for him to be able to run and giving him, you know, directed opportunities to do so. I would, you know, if I honestly hope that, that as they continue to run this offense, that they continue to foster that ability to be a runner and let him be that. He kind of reminds me in a way of, like old school 1970s quarterbacks. Like he'd fit in the, not in the, maybe at the top of the level, but in that neighborhood of guys like Staubach and Bradshaw
Jurgensen.
In the way that,
yes,
guys who moved and ran and who were kind of big guys who could take the punishment, but maybe weren't the, didn't, you know, depending on what end of the spectrum they were, isn't the greatest at reading the field or managing high pressure situations along with those types of reads. So that's where I'm curious to see where he goes. Cause I was pretty critical of him last week on a Football Guys podcast where I just said, I just don't think he's ever going to become a top franchise quarterback. I think he may become a Pro Bowl quarterback, or which I think is now the participation trophy of the NFL. In the way that the voting is done. But I think he can get stats to be, to look like a top quarterback at times, but I don't think he has the decision-making mindset to become that, to become the top guy. But it doesn't mean that they can't build a good team around him. And like you said, go to a championship game, to a Super Bowl, make a Pro Bowl with the production that he gets. If he's got guys like Tarik Cohen and Burton and Allen Robinson and Gabriel around him that can do a lot of damage. So I'm excited. He's probably one of the guys I'm most excited about seeing how his development unfolds, you know, and whether or not he can mature, and he'll be a nice test case or another test case, you know, in terms of, do they have that higher end decision making capacity and that intuition? And if they don't, can they get it? You know, and so that's kind of where I'm at with him. How about Aaron Rodgers? Since we're in that division, you know, certainly the injuries hurt him. The line, the lack of receivers in terms of experienced receivers. But he just, to me, seemed like he was still rolling along, pretty great. You know, relative to the things that he had to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Rodgers, you still see that, you know, inside of him, and, you know, even if you look back the first game with Philbin, he's still Aaron Rodgers. I think, yes, there has been sort of a drop off in the production over the past, you know, season. He's not putting up the Aaron Rodgers type numbers, but that quarterback that can still make those ridiculous flick of the wrist type throws, that quarterback that can still put the ball where he wants to put it most of the time. He's missed some throws this year, I will say. That quarterback is still there. Okay. You know, the main thing for the next offensive mind, whether it's an offensive coordinator or an offensive minded head coach who's, you know, that Mike McCarthy model yet again, is to realize that just because you have a tremendous talent at the quarterback position doesn't negate your responsibility to create an offense that helps him out. And look at Tom Brady. And, you know, for all you can say about the New England Patriots right now and the trouble that they may or may not be in, this is still an offense that does everything it can to try to get Tom Brady help in terms of motion and shifting and getting matchups and things like that. They didn't do that for Aaron Rodgers. And part of it was a reliance on the fact that Aaron Rodgers could create off script. So if you ran slant flat 15 times a game and the other 25 plays were some variation of a sticks concept or some variation of curl flat, that if that were covered, as it might be when a defense sees three plays over the course of a game, that he would be able to create something off of structure. Sometimes you can't do that. Yeah. You can't rely on that. You need to do things to help your quarterback. And if you take a sort of step back and look at the league writ large, and you look at how guys like Sean McVay are helping their quarterbacks, guys like Mitchell Trubisky and Matt Nagy are helping, you know, Matt Nagy's helping Mitchell Trubisky, and some of the ways that younger quarterbacks are being helped along, just because they're a veteran quarterback doesn't mean you don't help them. And so I think what you're going to need to see from the Packers next year is, you know, do something offensively, whether it's a variety in play calls, whether it's a variety in offensive structure, whether it's man, motion, whatever, to give Aaron Rodgers some help. He's still a great quarterback, but it doesn't relieve you of your obligation as a coach to put him in the best position to be successful.
Exactly. And I don't think it helps the team either to kind of have him be an offensive coordinator on the field in a situation where he doesn't have the have the structure there, because he's also a guy who doesn't, you know, I feel like he's the type of guy that tends to want to veer away from the run when the run could be helpful. Who kind of is in a, it, when you have a dysfunctional situation, even if you're a functional type of guy, sometimes what happens is you're forced to have to behave in a dysfunctional way as well, or just walk off the field and say, I'm not playing, which you cannot do as a professional. So, but, right. You know.
Well, I mean, you can, but then you'd be, who's the guy that Vontae Davis, he retired at like halftime.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and hey, listen, as a human being, I respect that about him, as, you know, because of, I know that a lot of people who are just football people will say, I have no respect for that. But I think, you know, we know that football is a dangerous game. We know it's a physical sport. And if he's willing to deal with, you know, the criticism and deal with, you know, what's said, because he knows that he can't give it at that point, and he, and it's time to go, I'm good with that. It's just like someone who you're on a job and it may stink. You may be angry if you're like working on a line at a restaurant and someone just says, I can't do this anymore. I'm not caring about what I'm doing, and I'm liable to like injure people or injure myself, you know, doing this. I may be mad that day because I don't have someone to help out, and now I'm overloaded, but in the scheme of things, you know, so, but yeah. So let's move on. Let's finish up this NFC North and talk a little bit about Matt Stafford and Kirk Cousins. I mean, you know, Stafford to me seemed like he got busted up pretty much in the first game, and was recovering from that for a few weeks, I think, even though there's been nothing really mentioned in injury reports, but the Lions are notorious about keeping things kind of on the down low. But he got cracked pretty good, and I bet that affected him for a good month. And then things just kind of went downhill from there. And then Kirk Cousins went kind of the op, you know, he started flying high, but then we're seeing, you know, struggles with him as of late. What have you seen from these two guys?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think with Cousins, you've seen, you know, I think one thing we do have to sort of mention is sort of the fact that they just fired their offensive coordinator, you know, and I think that there was, I don't know if it was a clash of the minds or what between DeFilippo and Mike Zimmer, but it seemed like, look, they couldn't run the ball. Zimmer wanted to run the ball. Flip said, look, we can't do it, so we're going to keep throwing the ball as much as we can. And that might make sense given the fact that, look, you have a fantastic tandem of wide receivers and Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, but it just wasn't working for whatever reason. I think with Cousins, the ultimate question with him was going to be, how good can he handle pressure? Because from clean pockets, he's great. Under pressure, though, you see the decision-making crack a bit. You see the placement crack a bit. And there were times when you saw that sort of rear its head this season. You look at how the Patriots sort of defended him back a couple of weeks ago. They use that sort of radar front where they take Trey Flowers, their best edge player, they put him down at center, and they just move everybody else around behind him. Nobody knows who's coming or going. That really sort of flustered that offensive line. It flustered Cousins. He made a bunch of early check downs, some poor throws under pressure. That was the book on him. You know, the pick six that he threw against the Saints, again, pressured, doesn't make the right decision with the football. And ultimately, that's the critical factor with Kirk Cousins, is how well is he going to handle pressure? And that's why when you study quarterbacks, like how they respond to blitzes and pressure looks and things like that, it's a critical component because you're going to face into the National Football League. You know, with Stafford, I think there's been a talent drain around him. You know, they make the trade with Tate. They've had injuries at the wide receiver spot, had injuries at the running back spot. He's got beat up. He was sacked, what, 10 times by Minnesota. There's rumblings now that maybe he's dealing with an injury, like you sort of said. No, I think with Stafford, he was a guy that I thought was a top five type quarterback. And we just haven't seen it this year. And I do think that the talent drain and the injury and the hardships that he's faced as a quarterback has played a role. But at the same time, like, some of the throws haven't been there. Some of the downfield stuff hasn't been there at times. You know, I just hope that it's sort of a lost type season due to injury and talent drain, and that he's back to what I expect to see from him next year. And, you know, if not, we do sort of have to wonder about his future too.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, for me, it's like the same thing. When I watch Kirk Cousins, I've never was really a fan because of the blitz issues, the decision-making issues under pressure. And then with Stafford, I've always been a fan of his. I mean, he was kind of that, you know, higher end version of Josh Allen in terms of the arm talent, but not necessarily. And he could move around too, but he was never quite the runner the way they had Josh Allen be. He was more of a, I'm going to scramble. He might do the Benny Hill theme scramble around like Josh Allen does, but never really break the line of scrimmage, often looking to throw. And I'm kind of done. I can understand why a lot of Detroit fans are done making excuses for him, and have been done making excuses for him even like 3, 4, 5 years ago. I'm kind of getting it now, but it's a hard thing to do because you watch some of the higher end things that he's done, and then you see that he still dips to the bottom of the barrel with some of his decisions and some of his the way that he views things. And he's just one of those guys that he needs a lot of structure. I think he needs a lot of help. He needs a lot of structure. And I wonder if his beginnings in Detroit and the development he really didn't have ruined him. And when I say ruined him, he's a good NFL quarterback. He's still a good NFL quarterback, but he had a good career. I think he was a guy that a lot of people would have said should have had a better career based on what type of tools he had and some of the heights that he flashed and achieved, if he could have sustained that. And I think that's what we're seeing is a player who deserved to be the number one overall pick in the draft, but we saw a player who should have been a lot more than that and never got there. And I think that it gives you a clear picture of how coaching matters so much in development. And when you've gone through a bevy of coaches and you've had some coaches say, yeah, just throw it up to Calvin Johnson, you know, not go through your reads. And then you've had other coaches kind of say, okay, now you go through your reads, but we don't have anybody remotely as good as Calvin Johnson. To then suddenly having some balance, but now you don't have an offensive line or a run game. All these components really factor in. So, yeah, I mean, let's look at the NFC West a little bit. Josh, you know, talk about Jared Goff and, you know, what you're seeing with him, especially lately, because I've noticed that, to me, the offensive line's been fooled a lot since the Lions game. And it seems like every team has been able to kind of cross up that offensive line, which has gotten pressure on Goff. And once you're, you know, dealing with that much pressure, you're going to get forced into some bad throws, you know, and some bad decisions there. You know, share a little bit about what your insights are about that and anything overall about golf.
Yeah. What's interesting about the Rams right now is that we just got done talking about some of the Lions' struggles on the offensive side of the ball. But you look at what the Detroit Lions did a couple of weeks ago to the Rams. They finally were the first team to sort of figure out that Sean McVay has built this offense around a couple of different ideas. One is he's going to use 11 personnel almost exclusively. That's going to get you running against nickel and dime personnel, but they're still going to run the football a ton out of this, which has given Todd Gurley some light boxes to go up against. That's one thing that they've done. Another thing that Sean McVay has done is use jet motion as a weapon in that offense, but primarily as eye candy, as a distraction, as a decoy. And so you would see 10, 12 times a game that sort of jet motion from a Robert Woods, from a Brandon Cooks. You'd see that look where, you know, Goff is under center. You come in jet motion. They snap it right when the receiver in motion is near Goff so he can fake the jet sweep, fake to Gurley. Now you've got eye candy all over the field, and defenses are wondering who has the ball, what's happening. You got somebody that's running with the motion, man. So you get defenders, you know, moving out of position at the snap of the football, which is always an advantage for the offense. Again, as a former quarterback, I've always said that if you can get a defensive player thinking more than he has to, you're in a good position. Shot at our good defensive friends here. But anyway, the Lions in the second half of that game said, forget it. We're just going to ignore that. They never do anything with it. And if they do, they're either a jet sweep handoff, and maybe we set the edge, maybe we don't, or that person releases to the flat. We're not going to worry about that. We're just chasing ghosts. So they stopped trailing it. The Bears took that the same way. They said, forget it. And so you go through those two games and you see jet motion guys release into the flat completely uncovered, but they were never going to be targeted in the passing game. And so what that's done is it's allowed them to sort of get better run fits, get better pass lane fits. McVay's offense is predicated on getting angles in the pass game, in the pass scheme, and in the run blocking realm as well. But without the shifts that they've come to expect, those angles aren't as good. And so they've, like you said, they've gotten guys crossed up now up front. And that's led to this pressure on Jared Goff. The interesting thing about it from my perspective is when I studied Goff coming out of Cal, one of the things that I sort of liked was his pocket movement. And again, not the most athletic quarterback, but he showed an ability to sort of move, to slide, to, you know, dance around a little bit with his feet to sort of create space and get some throws off. That was good against one or two defenders. But now when you're seeing a little bit more pressure, you know, that's been sort of the fall off. And that's why we've seen over the past couple of weeks, this offense really sort of struggle. And you've seen, you know, interceptions against Chicago. And again, Chicago is probably not the best comparison for a quarterback to be studied this year because that defense is so good. But, you know, even last week against the Eagles, you saw some struggles against an Eagles defense, which has been porous at times. And so now it comes back to McVay. And if he's the genius that we've all described him to be, and he is, it's not because he can name every defender on the Bears starting defense. It's because he's come up with designs to help his quarterback. And I think what he needs to do is make that jet sweep a weapon again by throwing that to the flat, by handing it off to Brandon Cooks a couple of times. You don't need to do it a ton, just one or two more times. So that defense, whether it's who they're playing this week, whether it's down the road, has to respect it again. Because so much of what they were doing in the pass game was built off of that. They had a drive against Detroit where they went three different ways with that jet sweep type motion, where they're going boot action one way, throwback screens. It was one of the better drives I've seen any offensive play caller put together this year. And once Detroit figured out what to do, they've struggled since then. And so that's now McVay's charge. Yeah. Figure out a way to make that relevant again.
Yeah, and that's a great analysis of that point, because you even look at Houston. Houston does a great job of throwing on that jet sweep motion. They did it with QT. They do it with DeAndre Carter, which I thought was an awesome pickup for them from the Eagles. He was a perfect fit to replace QT in terms of what they were able to use them for. And they throw that jet sweep motion all the time. And there's a lot of things that are kind of fun about what you can do with it, because you can motion that guy across and throw him, you know, on that little wide route, or you can motion him across and have him kind of run a bullet route and throw it deeper, or you can have him motion towards the line, motion back where he came from, and then throw him that little wide route to the opposite side. So there's a lot of little plays that can be manufactured from that can catch a defense off guard. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the playoffs we see that really early on with a defense that's been coached to ignore it. And maybe that's what McVay's doing. Maybe, I mean, that would be really genius, or overthinking it on my end and not knowing what genius is, but it would be to be like with Arizona and be like, let's just eke out this thing. We know where we stand and, you know, try and go through it. And then in the wild card, we're going to run this. They're going to ignore it. And we're going to pop them for a couple of big plays. And this game's going to be over. You know,
it could be. And I mean, if McVay pulls that off, that's some serious genius, you know, Spock style, seventh dimensional chess, man. Yeah. I'd be impressed.
Yeah, I would too. I don't know if that's it, but it's fun to, you know, talk, ruminate on here. How about Russell Wilson? You know, one of the things I've noticed as a Seahawks fan is that this year he's not getting away from pressure nearly as much as he has in the past, and he hasn't been able to buy time as well as he used to be in previous years, which is funny because this offensive line's played better. The run game's played better. It's, you know, it's kind of been a boom or bust with some of the downfield passing game. And, you know, certain, he's gotten, you know, some production out of guys like David Moore, who's coming on as a vertical player. And, you know, Doug Baldwin being hurt has certainly been a big factor in that, I believe, because if, you know, but at the same time, I've just noticed with him that even just his ability to avoid pressure has been not as good as I've seen in recent years. And while I enjoy him trolling the running backs don't matter, you know, contention of folks. And as again, you know, if you're new to hearing me talk about that, I understand their point. I just like to joke around because I like seeing them go old school and run the football and seeing it work, because I think there's a number of ways to win in football. And they're just illustrating one where some folks tend to get a little too formulaic and say, there's only one way and it's this current way, you know? And I think that that's, they're going against that. So tell me if you've noticed the same things about Wilson and what else that you have to add.
Wilson's 2018 season is so strange to me because I agree with you. There are times when you'd see him be able to sort of extend and create more. Like last year, he had that ridiculous play. I forget if it was a Sunday night or a Monday night, or maybe it was a Thursday night game where he like – he just made a ridiculous throw, like moving one way, then the other, then late in the play to Doug Baldwin. He was doing stuff like that all the time. He was like 96% of their offensive output last year. This year, he hasn't had those type of splash type moments. There have been times when the pressure was able to get home. He can still create. He can still create on the move. You look back at, you know, that game against San Francisco last week at a 1st and 10 late in the first quarter where he was pressured off of play action, creates the move, finds Lockett along the left sideline and scrambled to a situation for the first down. The touchdown pass to Baldwin where he was flushed left then to the right. Baldwin makes a great adjustment on a throw that was kind of off target, but still that goes for a touchdown. So you're seeing bits and pieces of it. But what's been interesting is, and maybe it's because of the way that they've tried to run the ball a little bit more, we've seen – and again, I don't want to ruffle any feathers over in the, you know, the never run contingent of, you know, football Twitter, but there's been an effectiveness to him. You look at, again, quarterback rating is not the best metric of, you know, measuring passers, but as of right now, he has had his best quarterback rating on a season-to-season basis so far, 111.6. Adjusted net yards per attempt, 7.35, his best since the 2015 season, and almost a full yard better than last year. And so there's been an effectiveness to him as a passer this year, and I think part of it is we're seeing him do some little things from the pocket, which have been impressive. They had a play against San Francisco last week, a 3rd and 8 situation. San Francisco brings the blitz. The pocket's collapsing around him. Normally, you'd see Russell Wilson bail. He doesn't. Makes a throw under duress to Doug Baldwin on a crosser route, throws it low and in front of him, leads him away from the defender, moves the chains on a 3rd and long situation. We're seeing him do more and more stuff like that. And so it's similar to development we've seen from a guy like a Deshaun Watson, although they're two players at different ends of the, you know, experience spectrum, where when you start doing those little things from the pocket, you're a much more effective quarterback and you're a much tougher quarterback to defend. While we always say that, look, it's hard to defend a mobile quarterback. It's hard to defend the guy that can create. And sure, there's some truth to that. But when you bring the blitz and the guy doesn't have to leave the pocket to still burn you, there's a dangerous element to that as well. And that's one of the things I've seen with Wilson, which has impressed me this season.
Maybe that's maybe part of this is an adjustment to the fact that he's going to win more from the pocket. So maybe he's a little slower bailing from the pocket than he's been. And part of that is you have to think a little bit more. So maybe he's thinking an extra step. So when he does actually bail, he's a little slow on bailing in ways that he had otherwise not been, because he's beginning to trust his pocket a little bit more. I mean, after all, he's been in the league for 7 years, and for most of those 7 years, he hasn't had a great offensive line or even a good offensive line. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like a marriage. I mean, if you've been married for 7 years and you've been doing things one way and you've come to expect that, if now you have to rethink the how things are going to go, you've decided you're going to try something different in terms of how your normal everyday routine is, you're probably going to screw that up or overthink things for a little bit and need an adjustment period for a while of, you know, how you work together in a certain way. And I can see how an offensive line and a And a quarterback in that sense in the pocket is like a marriage. And if you've been married to 7 years for, to a spouse, who we can say that the offensive line is his spouse in the passing game, and the spouse has been irresponsible, hasn't been reliable, and, has generally let you down. Now suddenly they're like coming through and doing the things that you expect. It's going to mess you up a little bit because you're just not, you may have wanted it to be the way it is now, but you don't understand, there's some part of you that's instinctive and that hasn't, made the adjustment yet. And I think that might be a little part of what's going on. This is a weird positive adjustment year for him.
That's a fantastic analogy. And I think there's probably a lot of truth to that because, like you said, look, for so long, he's had to rely on his legs to survive. And he's learned it now that he doesn't have to. And it might be, like you said, we're getting to the point now where he can use an extra second or even two at times at the pocket to hang in there because he can now trust his offensive line. And while sometimes he might sort of have overcorrected to the point where he waits a little bit too long and now he can't escape, it's been that sort of feeling out process which has enabled him to be successful at times from the pocket, even in the face of pressure, where, if they continue this trend next year, they might have an even better season as an offense because now he'll have figured out the right balance. And, so much of playing the quarterback position is finding that balance between, touch and velocity or bailing or staying. And you face so many sort of balance questions as a quarterback. This is just one that Russell Wilson has to figure out.
All right. So we have about 20 minutes of time left, and I definitely want to get to the AFC here. But is there anybody in the NFC that's kind of caught your eye or that you've been thinking about that you'd like to remark upon in terms of their work? You can, I'll leave the floor open for you to mention a few people if you'd like, or just one or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think a name that people have obviously been talking about a lot this year, is Josh Rosen. In the sense that, look, he was a quarterback. He was my top quarterback in this draft. You've seen some struggles with him. And I think that, he is a candidate, I'd say, for the next Goff. We're always looking for the next, right? So, yes. You saw the rebound that Goff had under McVay. So now the Bears are trying to duplicate that with Nagy and Trubisky. And maybe he's sort of getting there. It might be a two-year project instead of a quick one-year turnaround. I think, Trubisky is on track to potentially have a better year next year. I think Rosen is sort of the player that might be sort of the next Goff, where, they obviously have a talent problem around him. They've had some injuries. He was developing a good sort of relationship with Christian Kirk. He's now hurt. They fire the offensive coordinator, and I will admit to taking an L on that one. I thought the pairing of McCoy and Rosen would make a ton of sense.
Me too.
It did not. And part of that might have been you take a guy like Johnson and you don't use him the way you run him basically into the A gap 10 times a game. That's probably not the way you want to use that guy, but I digress. I think Rosen's – I'm still very cautiously optimistic about Josh Rosen. I think looking around the rest of the NFC, we've seen some struggles the past couple of weeks from Drew Brees. That offense seems to have slowed down a bit. I think they're seeing a lot more man coverage over the past couple of weeks, and I think we've seen Brees sort of try to create a little bit more off structure, off script than we're used to seeing from him. There was Seth Kalina, who is an offensive coordinator for a program up in Canada, but he does some great threads on Twitter. Yeah. He pointed out a simple stick concept. You had stick to the left side. You had a two-man concept to the right. You typically try to throw that away from the middle linebacker, away from the way he opens. He tried to create towards the way the middle linebacker opened. He opened to the stick. He still tried to create it over there. It was nearly intercepted. Seth put together a great video on that. You can find it. I think it's at Seth Kalina on Twitter. And it's a great sort of encapsulation of how Brees and that offense has struggled the past couple of weeks. Finally, two quarterbacks I'll mention, two quarterbacks that, those teams sort of have some decisions to make, I think. One is the New York Giants, the other the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Giants, they've had an up and down season here with Eli Manning. At the start of the year, he was captain checked down. Schumer was designing some concepts to challenge down the middle of the field, down the sidelines against cover two in that turkey hole. He wasn't taking those shots. He started to take some of those. We're hearing rumblings that the Giants might, bring him back for 2019, and they might have to. I know we're not going to talk draft stuff, But you look at this 2019 quarterback class, I'm usually right there with you, Matt. We're usually the ones picking up the shield and the sword to defend the quarterback's classes as being better than people are making them out to be. If Herbert stays, if Haskins stays, and they both might, it might not be the year to find a new starter in a rookie class that's coming out. And so the Giants might have had the decision made for them, depending on what those two guys do. And then there's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Jameis Winston. Jameis continues to be erratic and consistent, but he still shows you flashes of talent. You look at him third and long against Tampa Bay late in the first half against the Baltimore Ravens, He gets flushed to his right, then to his left, comes back, reverses field, makes a ridiculous throw downfield deep to Mike Evans for a huge gain to get them out of the hole that they were in. He shows you those flashes. But then he'll have the four interception game like he did against Cincinnati, where he gets benched from Ryan Fitzpatrick. And so the Buccaneers, they have a decision to make. And maybe, again, because of the quarterback class that's coming out, because of the free agency's situation at the quarterback position, maybe they continue to roll with Winston. But with a potential new regime in town, I do wonder what they're going to do with Winston.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll remark on two guys, and then we'll move on to the AFC. Drew Brees, you said more man coverage. That implies to me also that his arm's getting tired. And I think that that tends to happen this time of year, and especially as an older player, you see older players, as good as they are, their arms get tired. Defenses know it, and they start playing more man. That becomes a product of at the end of the year. They also know the offense is a little bit better from all that tape study. The guy who's impressed me this year, and this, I don't know if this will surprise you or not, has been Dak Prescott. And I'll tell you why. I know that folks have been critical of Dak, and he's deserved the criticism. But what's impressed me is that when they did add a weapon, that he's worked his way through it to an extent. Again, this is a guy who started the league with an all-world offensive line. He had a great running back, still has a great running back. Had some established receivers, a Hall of Fame tight end, a guy coming off Pro Bowls at wide receiver. And so he had the weapons around him. The past 2 years, he hasn't really had the weapons around him. And then he lost a lot of some of the major components of the offensive line heading into this year and had a bunch of young wide receivers. So, yes, he doesn't throw with anticipation. Yes, he has some mechanical issues. Yes, he may miss a read on occasion, and maybe even more often than that. But what I like about him is that as limited as his upside might be compared to a Mahomes or a Baker Mayfield or maybe even Josh Rosen or someone of that nature, I like how he fights through things. I like how he's taken responsibility for his play. I like that when he did get some help around him, he's played better. And he's a battler. And so when I look at him, I've been impressed with him being a battler. It's kind of like I don't have the expectation the way I had the expectation for Matthew Stafford, which was he could someday become a top quarterback in this league. I don't see that from Dak Prescott. But what I do see is a guy who I think should still be the Cowboys starting quarterback next year and beyond. And if they continue to, and that they figure out their strategy and say, we just need to build talent around him. I honestly think that if I had to choose between Mitchell Trubisky and Dak Prescott, I'd take Prescott every single time. And it's because of what I see as a decision maker. I know the flaws. I know the faults. And I still think that I like that he'll find a way. I just think that he's better at finding a way. So he's in a weird backward sort of way. He's impressed me, and I wasn't a guy who was high on him at all for the past 2 years. But after seeing him kind of hit bottom in terms of public perception and from the analyst perception of him, and see him kind of claw his way back with the help of surrounding talent, I'm kind of converted to feeling like, okay, if they can find something better, great. But I don't think I think it's going to be harder to find something better than it looks.
Yeah. And so I just want to say, I am completely 100% on board with you on all of this. And what's amazing about Prescott, every year I sort of take a look back 2 years prior and look at the quarterback rankings. And I looked back, last April or so at the 2016 class where I had Goff 1, I had Wentz 2, I had Dak Prescott, QB 17. I just was not high on him. And I revisited my whole process with him, and I revisited, you know, page by page, line by line, all the notes that I had on him. And I found this note from his game against Alabama like 2 years before he came out. And I won't read all of it, but basically, great throw here late in the fourth quarter to the stick nod for touchdown, plus CT, which stands for competitive toughness. And my notes from that game read, very competitively tough player, can manipulate defenders with eyes, good play speed, yada, yada, yada. But it was right there in front of me, that point that you just made about his competitive toughness. And that's what I missed on him. I missed his competitive toughness as an athlete, as a quarterback, that drive to make yourself better. And that's everything that you just touched on about Dak Prescott and what we've seen of him, from him over the past year and a half. And that I learned from him. And that's why when we get to Deshaun Watson the next year, I was not going to miss competitive toughness in a quarterback for the second year in a row. And that's why, for more than any other reason, Watson was my QB1, because you see him, that leadership, that toughness, that competitive fire in him. That's why I loved Watson. I just missed it in Prescott. And that's exactly what you just spoke to, that competitive toughness, that fire as a quarterback to make yourself better. That's what's going to make him be the Dallas Cowboys quarterback for years to come.
All right, that ends part one of the RSP cast with Mark Schofield, where we talked about the NFC quarterbacks and how they performed this year. We're going to continue this podcast next week with a look at many of the AFC quarterbacks. You can find Mark's work not only at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, but also at Inside the Pylon, Big Blue Review, Pro Football Weekly, and The Score. He does excellent work. I highly recommend you checking out what he puts out there about quarterbacks and offensive schemes. Once again, the RSP publication is now available for pre-order at a pre-order discount of 10% through December 28th. So you can get it for $19.95. That includes the pre-draft, the post-draft, as well as being on the newsletter list that comes out monthly between June and December for $19.95. If you don't know enough about the RSP, you can find it out at mattwaldman.com or mattwaldmanrsp.com. Or listen, just go to Twitter, go to football forums, ask about it. I'm sure you'll be hearing enough things that you're going to want to check it out in further detail there. Or you can just hit me up at Matt Waldman on Twitter or mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. Thanks again. Have a great holiday season, and we'll see you next week.